92.3 Free FM. WFNY FM. New York. Mornings. David Lee Roth. On 92.3 Free FM.
All right.
I've got a very special guest in the audience tonight. I just thought I'd do like an Elvis introduction. I've got a very special guest in the audience tonight. His name is Derek Trucks.
All right.
Derek is the lead guitarist and founder of the Derek Trucks Band, and I saw him on television playing with the Allman Brothers and said, we got to get this kid coming down here. This is an amazing new talent. This is a fella who's been playing since he was 9 years old. He's played with everybody from Bob Dylan to Steve Stills, the Allman Brothers Buddy Guy. Derek, welcome.
Good to be here, man.
Did you wake up or stay up for this?
I actually woke up for this one. Usually when I see this hour, I'm up for it, staying up for
and,
it.
And now you're playing with the Allman Brothers at the Beacon Theater. This is their famous long run?
Yeah, the first show we did of the leg was the 175th show at the Beacon for the Allman Brothers, so it's an impressive run, 14 shows this year.
Oh, I was going to say, 175 shows in a row? Because they're almost up to that, right?
Yeah, since I've been in the band, the longest we've gone is 18, and that starts to feel like about 175 towards the end. But
do you like changing each city, each gig, or do you prefer to be in one place for a period of time?
You know, we tour so much between my group and the Allman Brothers, it's nice to be in the city for a month. It's the only time I get to unpack my suitcase.
That makes sense. How long have you been traveling with the fellas and playing with the Allman Brothers band?
I started in 99 with them when I turned 20, so it's been quite a road trip.
It's been amazing. Where have you seen? Are you been all through the United States, I take it?
Oh, yeah.
Where else have they taken you?
Well, with the Almonds just in the States, my group has made it around the world once or twice. You know, South America, Japan, just did Holland, and playing in Eric Clapton's band coming up this summer, so that's going to be a lot of cities that I haven't hit yet.
Tell us about that. What are you doing with Eric Clapton? What are you doing then?
I just got a call to tour in his, playing his touring band, so.
And you got to learn all those songs?
Yeah, it'll be fun, though. You know, a lot of those tunes I've known. At least heard, so it'll be a blast.
You were kind of born with Layla in the collective consciousness, I got to imagine, huh?
That record was always turning in my house. So.
Talking to Derek Trucks, who's guitar playing with the Allman Brothers here, what do you call the kind of music that you play, Derek?
You know, it's such an odd mix with our group. I mean, it's world soul. It's all roots music, whether it's playing a tune from Pakistan or Delta Blues or straight ahead jazz. It's all roots music, I'd say.
And what's your favorite? What's your favorite kind of music? What are you listening to today?
It's across the board, man. It's the music that plays on the bus. It's just out of hand.
And is what you're listening to different than the rest of the fellas in the Allman Brothers band?
Probably different than what Greg and some of the other guys are listening to, but there's some pretty wide open ears in that group.
Okay. How often do you practice? Do you actually practice, or do you let the gig carry that?
You get your road chops up. I think that's the best way to do it.
Okay.
I mean, if you hit a wall and there's something you need to work on, you obviously hit it. But we hit almost every night.
How long do you guys play for? You play for a couple hours? How many tunes do you actually do?
I mean, the Allman Brothers, we change a set list every night, try not to repeat too often. And I mean, I think last night's show was pushing 3.5 hours between the two sets. It's a full-on marathon.
Oh, you do two full sets? You take a break in the middle?
At the Beacon we do. Sometimes when we do the summer tour, it'll be one set, but the Beacon shows do about 1:15 first set, take a break, and then come back and go as long as it needs to go.
That's a full commitment. That's a Bruce Springsteen size heavy lifting load there, huh?
Yeah, the drummers, it fascinates me that as long as they've been doing it, they can still blast for that long. I think I'd have to be carried off the stage.
Yeah, how many pounds do you lose in an average performance, huh?
Those guys must. Last night was the 35th anniversary of the Fillmore East record, so we did that album from top to bottom. That was a good evening.
Do you feel compelled to catch most of the licks that are on that album? Because it's probably arguably one of the most well-known live albums ever, okay? Everybody knows every note, every vocal tone, or everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I can never change the words to Running with the Devil ever again for the rest of my entire lifetime or my grandchildren. Do you feel that you have some latitude to play, or do you try and follow what's going there and inflect it with your own tone?
You know, since I wasn't on those recordings, I I feel like I have a little more freedom to stretch out. I mean, you definitely hint at a lot of the classic lines, but you know, once you have people realizing where it's coming from, then you can take a hard left or right and go off on your little trip.
Because you got some pretty big expectations to fill, not shoes, because you are your own musician. You've got your own signature sound there. But in terms of some of the greats who were in that position before, do you think about that at all, or does that compel you, or are you just solidly sent on your own?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to at times pay homage to Dwayne and Dickie's thing too. I mean, it's those records and those sounds are so classic. Everyone's familiar with them, obviously. So, you know, you don't go completely on your own path with it. But it's nice. It's the rhythm section back there. It's like a train behind you. So you get to do your thing. You get to keep one foot in the past and one foot heading forward. So it's nice.
Makes perfect sense. What's the difference between playing with your band and what you're doing with the Allman Brothers? What's the critical difference there?
You know, when you have your own group, there's so much else that goes with it. You know, the babysitting aspect, the keeping
the rhythm section.
Yeah, it's a different trip entirely. And
where'd the musicians come from that are in your own band?
All over, just like the music we play. We have guys born in the early 50s, 60s, 70s, from all over the map. It's a wide group of humans. It's fun, though.
How do you guys fit into the country wave that is, you know, the country never leaves, but it comes in huge waves sometimes. And now with country music, television, and, you know, Nashville Star, the country equivalent to, you know, American Idol, et cetera, it's a whole entire another voter block now. And how does your music and how do you feel that you fill in that? How do you fit in with that?
You know, we've been really fortunate to have a really strong core group audience, and you know, it's a pretty underground scene that we run in. And just recently we've actually cut a few records that have had kind of crossed over a shot, but it's, you know, it's nice. We can go out and play as odd mix of music as we choose to, and the audience that comes out pretty much expects it. So you can play a straight ahead jazz tune followed by a Delta blues tune followed by a funk tune. It's a nice amount of freedom musically.
It seems like those ingredients were always contained in the kind of music that you're playing. You know, in the Allman Brothers, there was always a cowboy hat. There was always a blues
yeah.
band. There was always a slide guitar in there, you know.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem like a big leap to make some kind of a country effort there.
Yeah, just maybe a more extreme version of it. But, when I think back to what those guys were doing, early on, coming from the Deep South, having a multiracial band and the different musical backgrounds, it's amazing they made it out of it at all.
Sure. I knew Tom Dowd, who was the producer for a whole lot of the critically important stuff that was for the Allman Brothers there.
Yeah, I love Tom Dowd. He was a great guy.
Who's the producer you're working with now for your own stuff?
There's a guy in Nashville, Jay Joyce, that did this record. We're really, really proud to work with him. He had some amazing ideas. My wife recorded with Tom Dowd right before he passed away, and got to spend a lot of time with him. A fascinating character. Anyone that recorded some of those classic records that he did as well, you know, working with Ray Charles, helped invent the atom bomb. He's on the Manhattan Project. It's an amazing story.
He recorded Queen, Cream, you know, everything from Chain of Fools to Sunshine of Your Love there.
The Giant Steps, the John Coltrane record. It's amazing, his body of work.
Okay, you caused me to remember something here. Who, if you wanted to perform with some hero or some act from the past, if you were given whoever, even somebody who's already passed on into the ether here, who would you perform with?
You know, that's a huge list, but right now maybe Miles Davis's Electric Band.
Interesting.
Early on, that there was some crazy stuff going on there.
I like the way you think. See, because the last time I saw Tom Dowd was in Miami, and they were having a tribute to him at Julio Iglesias's house, his island, his partial country or whatever. And I got up, and I was the Dave in Sam and Dave. And we
nice.
And we sang Hold On, I'm Coming in front of Tom Dowd, you know, and Amit Erdogan and all of the characters there. That was my dream, you know. I wasn't even going to go, you know. I figured I don't belong at a
Dave
black tie.
Sam and Dave, that's great.
I got to be Dave with Sam and Dave. And you says Miles Davis. That's sharp thinking. Wow. You're married to Susan Tedeschi, right?
Yeah.
How long have you guys been married?
5 years now. We have two babies, so it's a...
And in 5 years of touring, how often have you seen each other? 14, 12, 20 hours?
Yeah, maybe 2 months all told.
Same reason my automobile always looks new in Los Angeles.
That's right. It's a fresh marriage still. And 5 years into it.
And it'll remain fresh. Now, she has a constant touring schedule as well, I've got to imagine. She herself is flavor of the big moment now, no?
Yeah, she's doing really well. She just released a record that is, I think it's her best record yet, and it's a lot of touring between now doing three bands. She's got her band, two babies. It's a lot of juggling.
That's a major amount of juggling, but somehow I get a sense from you and the way you speak that you're going to handle this a little better than Britney Spears.
We'll see. You know, the beauty of being on the road early is you get to see a lot of people make the mistakes that
Derek, I'm going to disagree with you, because the beauty of being on the road for me is that on the weekends I can actually act like Kevin Federline. Let's take a call here. Herb's got a memory here. 866-313-3733. Talking to Derek Trucks here, who's been playing the guitar with the Allman Brothers. He's here for the string of the events at the Beacon Theater. Go ahead, friend. You're on the phone. Got a question?
Hey, Dave. How you doing? Great show. I miss Howard, but was really impressed by your show.
Thanks so much.
I just wanted to comment that, I was visiting a friend in Hollywood, Florida, maybe 10 years ago, and he took me to some strip mall, and there was about 50 people there, and Derek was maybe 9 or 10. I saw him play in a band. I have some great photos of him. He posed for me. He had a guitar signed by B.B. King. He was playing some bad slide guitar.
You started off in a strip mall like Britney Spears?
We played a lot of little seedy joints over the years.
Oh, come on. The guitar don't sound right till it's been in a pawn shop at least twice.
That's
man.
Right,
come
least.
On. You start from... And tell us about this. What did you actually do this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was touring in Florida at age 9, 10, hitting all the blues clubs and the South... Chitlin circuit at the time, and so we've done a lot of crazy nightclubs along the way.
Did you put a hat out in front when you're at the mall?
Probably once or twice.
Because I got a clue for you. You need somebody like Animal to hand the hat around. It comes back fuller.
That's right.
Got another question, my friend? Go ahead, Herb.
No, I'm good. I see these pictures when I pull them out every once in a while. I mean, he's like a little kid. He has a ball cap on, and guitar was bigger than him, but he was playing bass.
Going back to the roots, thanks for giving us a call. That's credibility, man. When you start off like that, did you start off with an expensive guitar or did you have a piece of junk?
No, it was a beater. It was a $5 garage sale guitar, so you got to make that work first.
What are you playing now?
An old Gibson SG through a, until a few days ago, a 1965 Fender Super Reverb. We had all our... like the worst nightmare for a touring band. We had all our gear stolen with my group in Atlanta, so the trailer just disappears. Now we're tracking down vintage gear throughout the country.
Oh, my God. So what, did you just go to the local music store and grab up something?
Well, luckily I had a few amps out here with the Allman Brothers that I don't use with my guys, so I still have that, and we don't start back up till the end of the month, so I got time to track some stuff down.
Fascinating. So tell us about your new album here. What are your expectations here? What do you got cooking? Are you going to tour on this, or when will we see this on television or pay-per-view, or when are we going to hear this on the radio?
It's been out for a few weeks now. Really happy with this record, the first studio record with our vocalist Mike Madison. First studio record in a few years, and we just did a DVD behind it that I think will be out in a few months. I think it'll be on maybe HDNet first. So
okay, and
excited
is this,
about that.
Is this something that, because of your age group, are you headed for MTV, is it VH1 or country music, or where is this going to?
No, I think if we... If we get a live show on HDNet, that's probably all the TV time we'll be looking for. We did a few of the late night shows, but I don't see any videos coming out of this band. We'll see.
Hey, you maybe need to give yourself a little bit more credit. What you've got here is a real, real modern sound here.
Cool,
if you don't mind, let me spin up the first few seconds of this, and let me give them a little taste. Go ahead, Hutch, bomb it. That don't sound like the Allman Brothers to us. Derek Trucks, this is his new tune. Yeah. That's the new Derek Trucks tune, and that sounds super modern. No, that's right up front at the front bumper of the culture, man.
Yeah, that's one of the first tunes we've recorded that clocked in under 4 minutes. So that's an experiment for us.
Okay, well, now that brings up an interesting perspective here, because you're used to really stretching on stage in terms of jamming and improvising.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what you will be doing when you get out with your own band? Is that the same nature there?
Yeah, you know, it definitely is closer to that. With this record, though, we really wanted to go in and not do a live show in the studio. We wanted to, you know, find tunes we felt really proud of and really serve the tunes and, you know, utilize the studio, take some sonic chances. And, you know, we play live all the time. We get a chance to air it out.
We're talking to Derek Trucks. His uncle is Butch Trucks, who is with the Allman Brothers drummer, and he's playing in town here for, what is it, 170 nights in a row.
That's right.
At the Beacon Theater.
Sold out.
It's a 22-hour show. And we got one more caller here, 866-313-3733. Go ahead. Got a question for Derek?
Yeah, hey, Derek, this is Randy from Boston. How are you, buddy?
Good. How you doing, man?
Good. Hey, what's it like, you know, being so young and I know you grew up with the Allman Brothers around your house every day, but being on stage with them and just being in awe of looking around and, you know, and seeing the Allmans and seeing your dad and seeing other people play.
You know, it's a trip. When I first set in with them at about maybe 11 or 12, it was much more nervous at that time.
Listen to how calm he says that. When I first sat in with him, when I was 11 or 12.
But, you know, over the years, you start hitting and you get on stage with people and you're up there playing music with them. So
yeah, like by the time you're 13.
Exactly. You got to be just confident and crazy enough to do it, though.
Thank you. You guys are great. I really appreciate it. And Dave, hey, break that glass and get Eddie and Alex out of there and go back on stage. Yeah?
Let's get some new talent in the bunch. Thanks for giving us a call. So, Derek, any kind of reflections for new young musicians? You yourself are a young musician here, and you've got some of the distance under the tire that some of us veterans have. You know, no, you get it. You know, working with the kind of team that you have been, you get a real nice balance. I sense that from the way you speak. And a real nice balance of real young ambition and class and a taste for history. Any kind of recommendations for up-and-coming musicians who are thinking to try and chase what you're chasing?
You know, I think as long as your intention is clean and you're doing it for the right reasons, you know.
What's the right reasons?
Hopefully playing music. You know, there's a lot of reasons to go out there. You know, it's a tough road, and if you're into it just to make bread, there's easier ways to do it. If you're actually addicted to the music and that's the trip, I think you'll be fine.
Do you think money can buy you love, Derek?
I haven't seen it yet, if it can.
But you could buy a brand new dual offshore ocean racing yacht and park next to some love?
That's true.
And if you play guitar like you do, she'll hear it and come walking over, right?
We'll see.
Subject matter for the next lyrical content.
That's funny.
Talking to Derek Trucks, one of the best new young guitars happening on the scene here. Derek, thanks for joining us
here. Thanks for having me.
God bless, man.
David Lee Roth on 92.3 Free FM.
Roth Radio. David Lee Roth. I have a very special guest here. He has appeared as if by magic. We didn't expect him just so soon. How very appropriate. His name is Chris Angel, world famous magician, illusionist, and stunt performer. Perhaps you know him from Mind Freak, Wednesdays at 10 on A&E, and that's the first weekly magic series to air on television in over 40 years. Some of the stunts that Chris has performed on the show include being towed 80 feet up into the air in a barrel full of water while being handcuffed and managing to escape, laying on a bed of nails while a Hummer drives over him. I'm going to let him start to describe this. Chris, how are you?
Yeah! Hey, what's up, man?
Why is it all magicians want to be a rock and roll star?
Dude, I've been a fan of yours since I was a kid, and I just want to say it's an honor and a pleasure, and congratulations on everything. Thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you very much. Give them the upbeat loop here on Episodes in Jazz one time. Where did you just come in from?
Came in from Vegas. I'm shooting season 2, which begins May 31st.
And how long is a season?
I do 21 new episodes.
Wow. And yeah. How do you come up with material for 22 episodes of Magic?
Usually my nightmares. Yeah. I actually try to do all sorts of things. I look at what people respond to. One of the biggest episodes last year was Levitation, where I was levitating people in Times Square and Fremont Street.
And you would go out with a camera crew, and yep. You would just accost innocent bystanders.
Just go up to, people and just literally in the round. You know, we live in a technological day and age where people have cameras in their cell phones, so it's a challenging task, but that's why people responded to it, because, I'm doing things that people have never seen, from in the middle of the street, not on the live stage, so it's like, I'm not on a proscenium, I'm floating a girl and people are 360 degrees around me and she's levitating in midair. So now I'm doing an episode where I float from one building to the next. I'm doing all sorts of crazy, crazy ass things.
This sounds great. And do you create most of these ideas yourself, or do you have people behind the scenes who assist you in something like this?
I usually come up with this stuff, but then I have an incredible team. No one man wins a war, so I have a great army, and they kind of, help minimize my risk, because a lot of things I do, like hanging by 4 fish hooks from a helicopter while I was flying 1,000 feet over the Valley of Fire, was a little ludicrous, but everybody keeps me safe.
That's the t-shirt I want to wear. Have you gone into merchandising? Can we get t-shirts?
Go to my website, chrisangel.com. There's all sorts of things. I actually teach you how to levitate, do all sorts of things on the site. And,
come on, I grew up in the 70s. I'll teach you how to levitate. You want to be rock and roll? Here we go.
There we go.
You did over 600 performances on Broadway here with the Mind Freak Act. What was that like for you? Do you like working the same place over and over, or do you prefer to move around rock and roll style?
Yeah, I actually like it so much that I'm just about to start my live show in Las Vegas for the next 10 years, which will be announced officially in the next 6 weeks. I'm just in the process of doing a big deal.
Wayne Newton's job is in jeopardy.
Either that or, I don't know, somebody out there.
Well, Las Vegas is incredibly hip now.
Yeah, it's totally cool.
Even as short as 10 summers ago, it was all very family-oriented, mm-hmm. And now it's the face of MTV meets VH1 times the rodeo finals. That is probably, arguably, one of the most happening cities in the world, and you're going to be one of the happeningest guys there. What's your perception of Las Vegas?
It's absolutely insane. It's, it's just, I go there and I shoot my show. I'm always in the midst of some party or something going on, and it's kind of hard to get work done while you're in Las Vegas because there's too much partying going on.
Oh, but absolutely.
There's never enough, is there?
Absolutely. So do you have magician groupies?
We get about 1.5 million hits a month on my website, and I have, a pretty loyal following. I've been very fortunate. And it's just kind of leaking, and I have an album coming out. I'm actually working with Jonathan Davis from Korn on my album. I actually been a musician longer. I write all the music for the show, so that drops June 7th, and then that's my fifth CD.
Fascinating. What instrument do you play?
Actually, vocals. But you can't tell. I don't do good David Lee Roth stuff,
No, it makes perfect sense, though. There's a symmetry to this.
Absolutely.
You've dovetailed a couple of different art forms here. It's not just when we think of magic, certain generations think of a black top hat and a bunny rabbit.
Some greasy guy pulling, it's leotards and girls. It's not about that. For me, it's more about performance art. It's about doing a lot of what I do is real. It blurs the line between reality and illusion. It's not a trick. When I hang by fish hooks, that's not a trick. So I kind of leave it up to the audience to determine what is what. I do a lot of mentalism. I get inside people's heads and stuff. But I actually was prepared to actually, try to show you something right now.
Please do.
If you want to describe it to the audience, I just have a.
I certainly will.
I'll show you. I'm going to stand up over here.
Where did that come from? What is that, dental floss?
Yeah, it's a little...
That's Carmen Electra's bikini. Let me floss my teeth with that.
I'm going to show you how I floss right now.
Okay. He's swallowing the dental floss. It's a piece of thread. It's approximately 1.5 feet long. It's approximately now 8 inches long. He's pulling it out of his eye. No, I have no idea how he did that. It's actually coming out of the bottom of his eyelid. He inhaled it up through his nasal canal, and now it's coming out of his eye. Part of it is going through his throat, and he's pulling the other part out of his eyelid. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. That actually came out of the bottom of his eyelid. I'm staring right at it with reading glasses that I bought at the airport. Look at that. And it's coming all the way out the bottom of his eyelid. Oh, that's the most amazingly gross thing I've ever seen.
Right, I'll leave it here, and I'll get it later.
Get one of the interns to wipe that up here. That was amazing.
Thanks, man.
Now, is that sleight of hand, or did you actually...
Sleight of eye.
That's an amazing trick.
Thanks.
you would be really good at contraband at the airports.
Absolutely. Maybe I am.
What else do you have in front of you?
They just gave me some stuff in the green room. There's some forks and stuff. Why don't you check it out, David?
Okay, this is
right?
a
just
regular
fork, right?
Just like the one that I took from room service.
Mm-hmm.
Over thing. Yeah, that's a real deal.
All right, check it out. It's going to take the fork. Okay. You can see that? Just going to shake it like this, and as I shake it, you'll actually see this happen. Watch.
Yeah, it looks like it's bending as you're shaking it. Oh, wait, the tines are starting to fall over. How do you do that? That's amazing.
Yeah.
He's called it, caused it
yeah,
to bend itself.
Check that out, too. I don't really think it's
fork bending.
Yeah, it's
mind
all,
bending.
It's all just basically... Just hit the,
he's shaking the fork, and now the tines are starting, and then falls. How did you do that? He made it fall apart. That's stunning.
There you go.
My accountant does tricks like that. My litigating attorney does tricks like that to me. How do you do something like that when you're on a big stage?
The thing is that it's not, I kind of, jack of all trades. I do a little bit of everything. So when I'm on a big stage, I'm doing, you know, a lot larger things. I just got done working for Steve Wynn on a show called Le Rev, where I designed a lot of the large effects in there and stuff like that. So I do, you know, all sorts of things. I don't just limit myself to, you know, close-up magic or mentalism or, you know, it's just illusions. It's a plethora of... It's a spectrum, you know, of doing different things for different, you know, scenarios that I need to do.
You got the full circle here.
Yeah.
You've got the complete circle here. So are they building you your own, they're designing you your own space and everything? Tell us about what they're doing for you over there.
Yeah,
Vegas.
Because I signed a specific agreement, a non-disclosure agreement. I can't really get into great detail, but yes, it's going to be a theater that's been designed and developed for me, and it's going to be a pretty large production and stuff, and hopefully we'll be able to announce it on chrisangel.com in the next like 6 to 8 weeks.
This is exciting stuff. You won the Merlin Award from the International Society of Magicians. What do you do that would get you an accolade like that?
Well, I think because I perform you know, the art of magic in a more provocative way, and I think it's you know, because magic up to this point has been kind of like a hokey novelty, it's been perceived to be, you know, and I think me performing it in more of a popular culture way and understanding, you know, the emotional connection between magic and a person that's experiencing it and not putting the emphasis on the trick, but rather how people feel when they watch it, has really garnered a lot of attention. And, you know, the show was the number one show last year on cable television, and we're moving into season two. And, you know, I think it just connects to people. So I also am being awarded, which is, I never did this stuff for any awards I could really care less.
When did you start doing magic? When was the first time you did magic for somebody?
Yeah, probably when I was like 10, 11 years old, you know, and I got into music when I was like 6 or something. And it's just been a love-hate relationship ever since.
And did you know that you were going to become a magician professionally when you started off? I always knew I was going to be a musician.
Yeah, I always knew that I would be, you know, in this business, either doing music or the art of magic, or kind of a combination of both.
What's your favorite trick to do? What's your favorite magic?
I don't really have a favorite. I kind of, it's like probably like yourself. You just, you know, enjoy performing and entertaining, and it's just your vehicle to do that. So for me, it's not about one specific thing. I kind of just enjoy connecting to people.
What you just depicted to us is a kind of a reality informed. It's not a reality issue, but it's a reality informed kind of magic, in that it's about the folks who are standing around as much as the actual feat of magic that they're watching. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, and that's how magic started. It started in the streets, you know, thousands of years ago, and then it eventually evolved, you know, more recent times onto the stage, and now it's kind of going back to that organic place, that place where, you know, you're not really being set up because you're in an environment that, you know, you're familiar with. You're not watching it on a proscenium stage. So it has a really strong connection to people.
You know, P.T. Barnum, the great impresario from Barnum and Bailey Circus, has a world-famous saying, the public loves nothing more than being duped, except perhaps to be duped really well. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, so much so that we're doing a show called Sucker, and what Sucker is we're going to set up shop as psychics and stuff, and basically go out there and show people that, you know, it's very easy to you know, get people to believe anything, you know, in UFOs and stuff like that, and then we completely expose the whole thing and show how we do it.
this is quite a future you've got laid out for you.
Yeah.
And you're going to be basing out of Las Vegas then, huh?
Yeah, well, right now I'm living in Vegas, and I'm actually here doing an event for Mont Blanc. It's their 100th anniversary. And so I'm out here doing an event tomorrow night. And, yeah, but I'm basically now living in Las Vegas, Sin City.
Outstanding. Chris Angel, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
God bless.
David Lee Roth, the 92.3 Free FM.
We got a tune here that features just about everybody in the band. Little thing written by our drummer. This is called... This expresses our feeling, ladies and gentlemen. It's called I Feel Like Singing. Don't seem to get much enjoyment.
Enjoyment. Some are always glad, others always sad.
But lately, seems that I've been
somewhere in between.
It's a funny feeling.
Love is what I mean. Yes, I'm so in love. Can't tell down from up above. Down, down, down from up above.
I feel like singing. I feel like singing.
So what did you think of our last guest there? He's a pretty special guy, huh? Chris Angel?
Awesome.
That was an amazing trick that he did with those forks. And look, those are not fake forks. Take a look. Those are the real deal there, right?
Yeah, I was checking them out.
The animal is checking them out. Animal, you could bend those anyways, right?
Oh, yeah, no problem. I tell him to come out. Let me show you how to watch this.
No. You don't bend it like that. You got to make the animal war face.
Oh, man.
And then somebody else will bend it out of terror. That was an amazing trick there.
Yeah, it was. I was very impressed. That was cool.
He's got quite an aura around him.
The eye and the nose thing, that was incredibly grossly cool.
Yeah, well, he swallowed a piece of what looked like thread and then pulled it out of the bottom of his eyelid. I don't know. I think I may have seen something like that on a National Geographic street performers in Pakistan kind of a thing.
No, I saw it.
Don't tell me that you've been to Pakistan with Eazy-E and you know how the trick goes. Just don't.
No. I just saw a guy do milk like that. He drank some milk and made it come out of his eye. He might have been him. I don't know.
I would not doubt it.
I'm pretty sure you could do it, though.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure. Anyway, that was Chris Angel, and he's going to be starting up in Las Vegas. He's going to be performing there. He's setting up residence in there. Vegas got him. That's the best part, is that that's Showbiz City. Usually when we talk about Vegas, you know, you think of the old school days or anything, but Vegas is super duper modern. He invited us to go to the show, too. Yeah, we're going to be broadcasting from Vegas. At some point in the near future, number five is, you've always wondered why he's called number five, Doug. It's because I fired the other four one before him. And Doug actually is flying down this weekend to Nashville to start figuring out where we're going to be broadcasting from down there. And then he's headed up to Las Vegas so he can reconnoiter a place there as well. Hey, we're not giving up our lives of crime and intrigue, at least for the time being. So, yeah, we got to go see him. And also, Derek Trucks, what a good interview he was, huh?
Yeah.
How old is he, like 25, 26 years old? And he's brand new in, he's not brand new in the game, but I think this is some of his first really well-known album work stuff. And that sounds pretty modern, you know, when you think that he's playing with the Allman Brothers. Okay, you get that sensibility, is that kind of music? But what he played us here has a really hyped modern sound. That's got a drum that is not from the past. Those drums are from the future there. So that was Derek Trucks. And those guys, the Allmans, aren't going to be playing for the next 37 nights at the... Beacon Theater, and then, well, that's just half the show. They only do the first half in the first 37 nights, and then there's a subsequent 37 nights. They started years ago doing one or two nights, and now it's expanded to something like 14 nights. Is that what he said? 14 nights at the Beacon Theater. That's it. That's a hell of a run. That's special. If Jimi Hendrix came back, you would expect that kind of a run there. And that, you know, he started talking. He's got that cool voice, you know, like when he's talking about the first time that he ever jammed with the Allman Brothers or anything. Turn the music off here, Hutch. And he gets real cool and goes, "Yeah, it was a little scary. I was only 11 or 12. Get out of here. So what, you felt comfortable by bar mitzvah age, man? All the best here. Actor Dennis Quaid said he's getting professional help for what he calls manorexia, the male version of anorexia. Turn up the music. I want to think about this for one second. Okay, not that long, because it's not going to take that long to think through this. Manorexia. It sounds like a heavy metal band on Sony, doesn't it? It sounds like the title of a heavy metal band. In an interview with Best Life magazine, Quaid said that his eating disorder apparently began in 1994 as he prepared to play emaciated Doc Holliday for the film Wyatt Earp. He said he lost 40 pounds for the role, weighed only 130 to start with, and he said at the time he was eating less than 600 calories, blah, 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 and now he sees fat in the mirror no matter how thin he becomes. And Quaid is coming forward and talking about the problem so that other men will get help. If you suffer from manorexia, give us a call, 866-313-3733. If you have a man perm, a merm, give us a call, 866-313-3733. If you've had your chest shaved, manscaping, don't bother calling me. Okay. We know from the novel, you know, the fellow who wrote the novel, A Million Little Pieces or whatever, for Oprah, that wearing your infirmities, what used to be called crying into your beer, is now a public reason to get on the Oprah show. I'm sure we're going to see an emaciated concentration camp Dennis Quaid. God, you know what? If he's smart, he's going to buy clothes that are four times too big. It'll get better sympathy, right? And you can sit there, and, you know, when she offers him something like some coffee, you can go, "Oh, no, 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 no." No sugar, just coffee. What do you think? Is this a real deal? Is this somebody just looking to get back in the spotlight because of... is this like Madonna with Kabbalah? Is he convinced that he really is anorexic? Is there such a thing as male anorexia? I mean, outside the fashion industry. Outside the rock and roll industry. Remember when the Black Crowes came out? Remember how the singer looked? He had that David Bowie thing. That's not anorexia, though. That's just too busy on the road. I got to wonder, can guys really get anorexia? 866-313-3733. I don't know if Quaid is actually doing a lot of work these days. It says here 1994 with Wyatt Earp. What's he done since then? Is this a play to get publicity?
I think he's done a couple of movies since then, but nothing kind of, you know, that's like blown the roof off.
Exactly. You know? And this is when we start trundling out all the other things that we supposedly are or that we supposedly do. Yeah. If he was having successful play in the movies and so forth...
And he wouldn't be sick.
Well, it would become a, you know, I think that bulimia, at least, is a fashion accessory, just judging from the celebutards I read about in Page Six. You know, I told you, when they had the fashion cafe that the models started and everything, I went and I said, "Give me what the models eat." And they gave me a potato chip and a feather with a bucket for put down my throat. Animal. Is there such a thing as anorexia in Covington County, Alabama?
No, no such thing, man. We have a hog killing, man. Everybody was fat, dog. Believe that.
Everybody was fat down there.
I can't remember nobody that I grew up with black that was skinny. I don't remember nobody like that because, like, we always, like, we crop food on half. You pick two hampers of butter beans, two hampers came home with you. And if you got the money, you didn't eat. You know, that's just how it was. You
okay.
Know, mama said, go out and buy what you want to eat with the money you got. Bring the food home.
So okay, so is anorexia a white rich person's disease?
Well, I've seen a lot of skinny white guys now and then, but I ain't seen no skinny black people. I'm serious. Put my hand on the...
In terms of anorexia, you don't think there's any black people out there who are suffering from this? I mean, outside of the...
It could be, but I haven't seen any.
Okay, so from your perspective, it's not a black person's disease, that it's a white person's disease. Do you think that it's a rich white person's disease?
Yeah, I think it's a rich disease and stuff. Because it's like, how can you look in the mirror... And you skin and you think you big. I done looked in the mirror and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Okay, everybody reinvents themselves every day. Mirror, mirror on the bathroom stink. Whose stuff don't stink? Yeah. And you try and recreate yourself. You put on the clothes or you figure out where you're going to go work out or something, right?
Yeah. I have like when I was like 390, I didn't want to lose the weight because I didn't think I could keep my job. But people like meet me for the first time. They think I'm a really big guy. And I used to look in the mirror, call my wife. I used to be depressed, man. Like, damn, the doctor want me to lose all this weight, man. What am I going to do, man? And I actually look in the mirror and I think I'm really small. I don't think I'm big as people say I am, man.
Exactly. Really, every time I say to you, how much are you? You go, you act embarrassed and go, I'm only 365, Dave. I gotta wonder, is there such a thing as black anorexics?
I take it back. Maybe it is now, since I think of how I used to look at myself and stuff.
Okay, I don't mean the Hamptons gang. I don't mean the Upper East Side gang, but in traditional inner city, is there such thing as Latino-Mexican anorexia? Are we seeing this? Is this a pattern? Or does this belong purely to expensive white characters here? Go ahead, take a call. It's 866-313-3733. Hopefully they have enough strength to lift the phone. Is this an anorexic? Talk to me. Roth Radio, you're on.
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Good, Rob. What's up?
Well, I was a collegiate wrestler for about 2 years, and the stretches to cut weight and make weight caused me to actually build up a little bit of anorexia, as you call it.
Okay, now you're describing people who are looking to lose weight for a specific event, but anorexia strikes me as a lifestyle. That's going to stay with you long past suffering yourself into a depleted state so that you make the weight. Agreed or disagree?
Totally agreed. I quit wrestling after about 2 years of collegiate wrestling. I still have problems.
Oh, so you still have problems as far as watching your weight and that you have a compulsion about gaining weight. You don't want to gain the weight and that has become a compulsion for you?
I watched every single calorie I ate.
Okay. Well, is your social life extraordinarily really, really, really good and you're doing the right thing?
not at all.
Okay, so you feel that you have that this is a medical liability and that you're feeling the after effects of this. You feel exhaustion and all the requisite stuff that comes with anorexia? You're listless?
Not anymore. That was about 5 years ago. I sought counseling for it.
Ah, what kind of counseling do you get for anorexia? No joke implied.
Well, they talk about prior issues in your life and why you feel you have to be better than what you are. Why you feel like you're not accepted the way you are. But being athletically involved, I didn't find it really that effective, her approach.
Yeah, you know, that's a difficult quantity, and it's something that I hadn't thought of. Thanks for sharing this with us, because you know what? When you start in sports, making the weight is imperative, as he's describing there, all right? And particularly when you go into professional sports, you know, and, if you're even a high school ball player down in Texas, and you're a winning ball player, now you really have expectations heaped onto you. I don't know that becoming compulsive behind that is actual anorexia. Maybe we can get an anorexic to share it with us. 866-313-3733. Go from the top there, Hutch. Roth Radio, feeling skinny. Who's on? I hope I didn't scare him away. Go ahead, my friend. You're on. Hit it.
Hey, I'm Mexican. I'm not even white. But you know what we got here in America? We've got the whole big head syndrome. You know, it's been driven to us that the bigger the head, the bigger the star. And when you look at yourself in the mirror, if your body doesn't look small compared to your head, I mean, you take a look at the 80s rock stars, you know, with the big hair and the skinny boys. You look in the mirror, if you don't have those same proportions, you're thinking, I'm fat, you know?
You may have a good point, because once when I was working in Vegas, we were working really crazy hours, and because of the heat outside, everybody lost their appetites, and somebody came up to me, it was one of the dancer girls, in fact, Christy, came up to me, and she said, Dave, your head's starting to look too big for the rest of your body, and I took it as a compliment. I'm not kidding. That's funny that you would bring that up. Were you attempting to make a joke, or are you being realistic?
No, I'm serious. I mean, you look at even yourself when you're on stage in your heyday, the big peak, you know, you're constantly making your hair bigger and you look cooler.
I think you have a point, because somebody said, a pretty girl said it to me, and I thought, great, I'm on the exact right super high weight loss diet of the rock stars.
Hey, what? Nobody looked better than David, you know, with the hair. You still look great, but the hair just, you know, gave you that proportion that, you know, we all look in the mirror and go, damn, I don't look like Dave.
You know what? I think you got a point. Hang on, I'm going to go fix my hair.
David Lee Roth in the mornings. 92.3 Free FM.